once more unto the breach, dear friends.
Else fill the wall up with our English dead.
Good morning again, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and welcome to another exciting second hour of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jake and
Jeff
McClure. We have a question hanging out there from Inquisitor John, and it's one that is not economically related, except to us. His question is, any sadness at the end of the live show format? And this is a weird thing for us. Yes, there's weird, it's like an emptiness. It's when doing this for 27 years as part of our, it's not just once a week. All the data that we talk about on the air every Saturday is stuff that we're gathering throughout the week. And part of my mindset, I mean, we're going to be doing the podcast, so I'm still going to be able to use this. But part of my mindset constantly has been, I'm on vacation and I'm watching natural gas tankers leaving a port. Or I'm looking at the amount of tourism at a restaurant. And part of my mind is saying, this is a good example to use on the radio. And I've been doing that. I've been doing the radio longer than I was alive before I started the radio. That's not true for Elder Baldy. 27 years is not the majority of his life, but for me it is. And so, yeah, I don't know if sadness is the right word. It's definitely going to have some adjustment for me. I feel like there's an emptiness there of what's going on? I'm sitting in the studio in my house getting ready for this, and I'm probably not going to be using this studio to do the podcast recordings, because the podcasts are going to be throughout the week that we play together at the end of the week on Saturday. So I don't know. I mean, people are saying, are you excited to have your Saturdays back? I don't know. I'm not there yet. It's very strange. I suppose it's a bit like retirement. And one of the things that we give advice to our clients on when they're coming up to financial independence, they're finally going to stop working because they don't have to anymore. A lot of times they didn't have to for years before they stopped. What do they do after? And I haven't followed our own advice. I didn't have here's what I should be doing on Saturday mornings. I guess it'll fill itself up, but.
Oh, it will. We got an email from a listener.
Roger.
Who's been a steady listener over the years.
Yeah.
I think it was Roger who said that we should possibly reconsider, because when he told his wife that he wasn't going to be listening to us every Saturday morning.
I'll read it in his words because it's humorous. This is from Roger. Roger, thank you very much. This is a fantastic email. He says, gentlemen, well, first we have to take umbrage at that. I'm not sure about this whole gentleman business, but we'll go from there. I heartily implore you to reconsider your decision to vacate the airways on Saturday mornings. It has produced what I'm sure were unintended consequences. I made the mistake of lamenting your soon-to-be absence to my wife. Now she has all kinds of chores lined up since my Saturday mornings will soon be free. The gleam in her eyes struck terror into my soul. Please have mercy on us regular listeners. And then he goes on to say, hope that above paragraph made you at least smile, maybe even produced a chuckle. Looking forward to the podcast. Yes, it did produce chuckles across all of our staff and across us as well. Thank you, Roger, for listening. And we do intend to give you an excuse to be not doing chores on Saturday morning with our podcasts. But because podcasts are by their nature much more portable, I'm not sure that your wife will believe your productivity constraints are that you must be near an old AM radio box. So as we spoke about last hour, productivity increase, new technology, you can listen to us and do chores at the same time. I won't say that.
Increase.
I won't say that too loudly.
I expect a jump in U.S. productivity because of that.
Right. We do need to give an extra warning disclosure about our radio program because it's not going to be a program on the radio anymore. It will be podcasts. We don't have a operating heavy machinery warning on there. We maybe should, because we have been told in no uncertain terms by multiple people that they enjoy listening to our voices while they go to sleep because it helps them go to sleep faster. So this is a form of sleep aid, and you may need to not operate heavy vehicles while listening to our podcasts.
You definitely want to consult with your medical professional on this.
Right. You also may need to up any of your mental health prescription dosage prior to listening to us for very long, because we tend to increase all kinds of mental illnesses just by talking. There we go. So yes,
there we go. True.
So that was a night. Thank you, John, for the question there. He had also asked about, hey, are you guys taking questions for your podcast? And yes, we take questions for the podcast, period. If you're emailing in questions on a regular basis, obviously it won't be live. A lot of people have sent us emails live during the program. We'll still take those. If you send it in on Saturday, we're likely to have it in the next podcast when it comes out. So please keep sending us the questions.
And we'll even answer. We'll also answer your email questions if you want us to.
Yes, by email.
Email.
Though a lot of people, I think, like to hear us saying it in a public setting. So
we can't make, under the economy, we cannot make enough note of what happened in November. What? We didn't have inflation in November. The PCE, which is the form of inflation that is probably far more accurate than the CPI, and is the one that the Federal Reserve follows, personal consumption expenditures.
Rather than the consumer price index, just to make things confusing.
Which accounts, now the reason it comes out later than the CPI is because they have to figure out what people are spending where, and then they give the weight of inflation to where people are actually spending their money rather than a fixed group of things, which, by the way, includes the mystical rent on your house that you're not paying. It was a minus 0.1%. Now, this is in the newsletter, but it's important. The 5-month average. Why 5 months? Because we're 5 months into the half here, and there's a lot of 5-month data out there. It's average 3.2% annualized increase for workers. Let me back up. Income has risen 3.2% on an annualized basis for the last 5 months. Okay. Meanwhile, the inflation rate that they are experiencing has a 5-month average of 0.16%, which is 1.94% when you analyze it. So in other words, inflation is running along at 1.94, just below 2, while wages are going up at 3.2. What does that mean in real terms? It means in real terms that people's wages are growing about 2% faster than inflation. Why is that important? Because that is the Federal Reserve's stated goal, is to have the economy growing at about 2% a year, because that's about as much as we can handle, folks. If we get above 2% a year growth in the economy, our infrastructure is insufficient to support it. So we will then get a greater demand than we can supply. Why? Because our highways are jammed. Our railroads are jammed. Our airways, our airline routes are jammed. Our airports are jammed. Until we build more and larger infrastructure, which will take a significant amount of time and a significant amount of money, presuming we have the foresight to do that, we can only afford to grow at about 2%. Now, what can we do in between? How if the highways are jammed, how can we grow at all? And there's some really good articles about that right now. The automated drivers are working in the warehouses very hard. There is a major change underway. And the major change underway is we're going to be able to put more goods through through the same pipeline than we had before. It's already happening in the warehouses. It used to be that it was easy to get a job, particularly in the Temple area where we are, by going to McLean and saying, I'll drive a forklift. And they always had a need for forklift drivers. Well, they're running out of need for forklift drivers. And the reason they're running out of need is twofold. One, there was a shortage of people who wanted to drive forklifts. So they innovated. And the forklifts are becoming more and more automated. The new factories that are being built around the country, and there's been a lot of new factories and warehouses built around the country, are largely being automated. Fewer people have to work there. And despite the fact that we have a very, very low unemployment rate, so we don't have enough workers, and we're satisfying that need by pushing more stuff through the same warehouse quicker through automation. And it's happening it's not there yet on the highways. There are tests being run across the country right now with semi-trailer trucks, 18-wheelers, that are being driven by computers. Now, there's a driver sitting in the seat monitoring. But once we get enough of those on the road and they form trains, in effect, of 18-wheelers, we should be able to push more goods through the same highway system than we did before. It's this innovation that's getting the job done. This is where we're going to make or break. We simply cannot build infrastructure fast enough to keep up. We have to use the infrastructure we have, maintain it, which we've not done well, maintain it better, and find a more efficient way to use the same infrastructure. The Chinese have approached it from the opposite direction. They're building more and more and more and more infrastructure. While their economy is probably stagnant and their population is shrinking, they're building more and more and more infrastructure to stimulate their economy, which means they'll probably wind up with way too much infrastructure for their economy. The Japanese have run into that about 15 years ago, and since then, their economy has been stuck in neutral. It's been stagnant, and we very well could see that happen in China. And the difference is that in China, because they're spending so much money on their military buildup, it very well could result in a serious problem in China. And that's just something that a serious economic crisis in China is something we don't want to see happen for two reasons. One, they are a major participant in the world economy, and it would hurt everybody. And secondly, when you see a serious economic crisis and you have a dictatorship or an autocracy or whatever they want to call it, whatever they're doing, the way you get people's minds off of it is you hire a lot of them and put uniforms on them and give them rifles. And that's a temporary fix, and it generally results in the collapse of the economy that did it. But it's not an uncommon way of doing it. And then they, having all those people with rifles and all those tanks and all those planes that they stole, that money was spent on, you got to do something with them. And that's how we get major wars. That is probable future in China. Let us hope and pray it doesn't happen.
All right. And now we're going to do a mild transition. Still Chinese, but we're going to throw Russia in there too. We're going to pull in the Federal Reserve. We're going to do the U.S. Treasury, China, Russia, all at the same time. We'll throw in some balloons and hacking and all in one subject. All right. So in order for this all to make sense, I'm going to tell you some stuff that's been going on behind the scenes based on the Ukraine-Russian war and the relationship that the United States has with China. When I say behind the scenes, I mean behind the financial scenes as well as behind the espionage scenes. So in order to do that, I've got to lay some groundwork. The Federal Reserve stopped buying a great deal of U.S. treasuries at the auction. So when the U.S. Treasury goes to get debt to pay for our budget, they sell bonds at auction. They're basically getting loans from the people that buy those bonds. And the way that's set up is there are major U.S. banks. It has to be a U.S. bank to participate in the auction. And those banks are required to say, hey, there are certain banks that in the group that say, hey, we brought together a consortium of buyers and we've agreed to buy X amount of debt. Okay. So that's going off to the side. And the Federal Reserve, since the beginning of the pandemic, was a big player in that market. They stepped in and they bought a bunch of it during the pandemic. They stopped doing that in 2021. That was the taper tantrums and all that, the tapering of purchasing of those things, of purchasing of mortgage-backed securities as well. So they're not in the market for treasuries at auction unless some of theirs are maturing and they're replacing it. But they are net getting rid of $60 billion a month of debt. They're not buying significantly more. They're not at the auction. So that's a piece. You just think about that for a second. Hold it in your mind. Now we're going to skip over to Russia and give you some background there because this is all going to make sense in a minute. Bear with me. Russia has some portions of its culture that are extremely sophisticated and some portions of its culture that we would consider extremely primitive. So its strategy for its armed forces, its whole system in its army, we consider that to be utterly primitive. They have semi-modern weapons, but they're using tactics and strategy from before the Romans. They haven't incorporated the Roman stuff into it. From that perspective, we consider it extremely primitive. But on their chess and their ballet and their espionage side of things, they are some of the preeminence in the world. There's no doubt about that. So in the arts scene, in the hacking world, they are extremely sophisticated. So it's a weird dichotomy to see the two different sides, one extremely primitive, one extremely advanced. Okay. Now, since Russia invaded Ukraine, Right before they invaded, they made this great big hoopla with the Chinese about being unreserved support for each other. And Putin went to Xi Jinping in China and Beijing, and Xi Jinping went to Moscow and watched the military parade. And so they had this unending support for each other. It's very, very dictatorish to, you know, we are friends for life forever and all that good stuff. Okay. So then Russia invaded Ukraine, and China was a little surprised by that. The United States has been saying for months, hey, they're about to invade, they're about to invade. China's like, no, they're not going to do that. We just talked to them. They're fine. Don't worry about it. And then they invaded. Okay. So the invasion happens and the Chinese are a little bit taken aback by it, but they're like, okay, in the middle of this, the United States and China are in a trade war. We've been in a trade war since 2018 and it's not stopped. It's still tit for tat. We're still smacking each other around and saying, oh, you did this, I'm going to do that. Okay. That is the scenario. At the beginning of 2023, the Biden administration said, well, not really the Biden, the Blinken, Secretary of State said, hey, we need to patch this up. Our generals aren't talking to each other. This could lead to really bad situations. The generals in China and the generals in the United States are not conversing. We need to have a meeting. We'll do this at the Secretary of State level. Blinken will go to China and we'll have a nice conversation, and we'll try to smooth out some of our diplomatic problems. Let's try to avoid escalation. And then an anonymous tip went into NORAD, North American Air Defense. It is the place under the mountain in Colorado Springs that said, hey, there's something in the sky over your country. And NORAD scrambled and looked, and sure enough, about 60 miles up, there's this massive balloon with a whole bunch of espionage equipment in it that is sending messages directly back to China. This is right before Blinken is set to go to China to smooth things over. So there's a national panic where we're up shooting down every balloon we can find. The Canadians sent up two F-16s to go shoot down a high school weather project with a air-to-air missile that was somewhere in the vicinity of $1 million for a couple of $100 weather balloon. We shot down a true Chinese spy balloon, though. And Blinken canceled his trip. He said, no way, you guys didn't tell us this was going on. NORAD's looking back and saying, hey, we didn't even think to look in this area, but look, we've got a way of looking, and they've been doing this for a while now. So our relationship deteriorated quickly. Now, how did we know about the balloon again? An anonymous tip that said, hey, look up in the sky. We don't know who told us that. Okay, so hold that in your mind for a minute. Come forward in time to November. And I set this thing up with the Federal Reserve. What does this have to do with Chinese spy balloons and the Russians? What in the world? Well, we have Xi Jinping was set to come visit directly with Joe Biden in the middle of November. That this, it's been now, things are escalating and both sides are saying, we got to stop the escalation. This could lead to things that nobody wants. Xi Jinping saying, hey, we don't want this to go into crazy trade war or into hot war territory. Joe Biden saying the same thing. Okay, so Xi Jinping has been scheduled to come to the United States. China, about 10 years ago, bought a bank in the United States so that it could participate at our treasury auctions. Because as I said before, you have to be a U.S. bank to participate at the treasury auction. So they bought a U.S. bank, and it's one of the, it is the largest bank in the world that's a commercial bank, not a central bank. And the night before the auction started, the auctioneers noticed something wrong. This didn't come from China. This came from the auctioneers. They preemptively discovered that this Chinese bank had been hacked. Now, who are the auctioneers? This is the Bank of New York Mellon. They're a very conservative group of people, and they have a cyber arm that is phenomenal. And they work directly with the FBI and the NSA and the Treasury Department to make sure that the Treasury debt sales are in order. We've talked in the past about the U.S. Army and the U.S. military being a phenomenal use of government and that it's the best in the world. Our cyber arm in communication with the private entities that are also doing it is also the best in the world. And I just said that the Russians have a good hacking system. I don't want to go too far in the background here. I want to keep to the core. But their hackers are individual hackers that are more like the ancient warrior concept, and ours are more like armies that are well organized and well funded. They have a very independent mindset in their hackers in Russia, and we have a very corporate or military aspect to our defense systems in the cyber world, whether that's corporate or governmental. And the Bank of New York Mellon said to the Chinese, hey, you got hacked. We're not going to accept any more messages from you. You got hacked. We don't know who hacked you, but we can look if you want. And at that point, all of the private institutions in the United States that are cybersecurity oriented started forensic investigation to all of the traffic in and around that bank. And they discovered that this is the Russians, the Cozy Bear group that is so famous for having hacked other folks in the past, hacked the Chinese bank, which could have, if they had come to auction and tried to bid and didn't bid, could have really disrupted our system. But the Bank of New York Mellon caught it and said, whoa, we're freezing that. We still had an auction that didn't have all of its bidding met. So the banks had to step in and buy that. Which banks did it? Bank of New York Mellon bought that debt and then turned around and said to the Chinese, you agreed to buy this in advance. You didn't get to bid the price up or down. You have to buy it from us because that's the rules of the auction house. So the Chinese almost lost a massive amount of face, almost did damage to the U.S. Treasury system, which could have caused a massive kerfluffle between us. But instead, we were able to point at the Russians, and Xi Jinping's mission to come to the United States didn't get canceled. If you put all these pieces together, it's not hard. This isn't conspiracy series stuff. The Russians do not want the Chinese and Americans to get diplomatic again. But in causing this hacking fiasco, the generals of the Chinese military are back in direct communication with the generals of the U.S. military and admirals. We're back into direct communication between our armed forces, which we had not had for well over a year. All these things with airplanes knocking down drones over the South China Sea, and none of our military was talking to their military in this. That could have led to a hot war in a moment by one young captain in an airplane firing a missile when he shouldn't. So we're back here to saying that all of that was probably Russians trying to interfere with our diplomatic relations with China. They don't want the Chinese and the Americans to get buddy-buddy again to start to figure out how to resolve our issues without, because what that means is that the Chinese will stop giving stuff to Russia in the middle of the Ukrainian war. But what it's done, it backfired, and the Chinese are less trusting of the Russians now. When all of this has happened way behind the scenes, when you put it all together, who was the anonymous tip from that discovered the spy balloon that caused Anthony Blinken not to go to China? Don't know. Wouldn't surprise me if the Russians were involved there. They know about the Chinese espionage program a lot more than we do. And if they knew about the spy balloons and pointed it out, the Chinese now may be looking back there to say, hey, maybe Russia tipped them up on this and messed up a long-running espionage program. We're happy that the Russians tipped us off. We didn't want them doing this, but I have to remind you, you know, in the whole, we're very upset that they were sending spy balloons over us. We have a network of satellites that are constantly over China, that are constantly tapping into their communications. I'm not saying it's a good idea to have a Chinese spy balloon, but we reacted as if this was a, you know, horrible, horrible thing. It is, we don't want them doing it, but we're doing it too. So this whole kerfluffle that caused us to stop communicating with China has now come to another kerfluffle, which almost caused us and the Chinese to be at more loggerhead, at greater discommunication, instead went the other direction, and the Russians are being very quiet about it, but they lost face with China. Now, that was a long kind of weird layup to some stuff that's going on in the background. It may not help with your day-to-day anything, but I found it fascinating putting all these pieces together. And that's the end of this subject for me.
I've been meaning to look for this for a long time, the meaning of the term Dutch disease. I thought it dated from the tulip scandal or something like that. It's 1977. What happened was the Dutch economy was doing okay prior to 1977, prior to the 1970s, but they discovered huge quantities of natural gas offshore from the Netherlands and the North Sea fields. And they drilled it, they began to sell it. It made for great wealth pouring into the Netherlands. However, because they didn't have the euro at that point, then I think it's a kroner that they used, rose tremendously in value, which made all of their exports to everywhere else in Europe and in the world crater. It made tourists not come there because everything was too expensive in the Netherlands. And their economy, outside of the money coming in from the gas fields, cratered. They had a one-nation severe recession going on. And then, if that wasn't bad enough, they realized that pumping all that gas out from underneath the rock was causing earthquakes all over the Netherlands. Well, an earthquake in the Netherlands is a whole different bag of beans than it is anywhere else, because most of the Netherlands, that's why they're called the Netherlands, they are most of them below sea level. And earthquakes threaten their dikes. And some of the dikes had sprung leaks in these earthquakes. And it was discovered that the reason they're having the earthquakes is because the ground is moving down because the gas is being pumped out of it. So they stopped pumping the gas out and the whole economy fell into a crater.
A disease.
So they called it, since then, the economies that are growing primarily on natural resources are when that starts happening, the Dutch disease term comes up. And it's certainly happened in African countries where they've had a great quantity of natural resources to sell, a great amount of wealth poured into the country, and the country thoroughly destabilized at that point. It's one of the reasons, by the way, Mexico is so unstable, because they have a lot of oil and they don't have to do anything except pump it out of the ground. It's one of the reasons that Venezuela is so unstable, because they have a lot of oil and they don't have to do anything but pump it out of the ground.
Nigeria, Yemen, Saudi Arabia, Iran, Iraq, right. Go down the list.
Dependence upon exports is not reliable. It is a destabilizing factor in an economy. Dependence upon natural resources exports further exacerbates that situation, which is why we are so blessed to have an economy that's primarily based on selling things to ourselves.
That's fantastic. We call it a consumer-based economy, but really what it is that we produce things primarily for our own use, and we like it enough that we say, oh, this is great, and we can sell it to other people as well. But it's primarily for us, where if you look at Russia, for instance, they don't produce a bunch of stuff for themselves. If you look at cars driving in Russia, none of them were made there. If you look at computers in Russia, none of them were made there. What products are made in Russia? Well, oil, timber, gold. These are natural products that don't require a great deal of innovation, and their economy is based on it. So it leads them to say, hey, we are going to invade to try to make up the difference. It doesn't work long term. It just doesn't work. You need this. What we started the first hour on is the concept of innovation and productivity to get true growth, rather than just, hey, we've got a bunch of stuff to sell that we're not working too hard to produce. Okay, another thing popped up this month. China's renminbi, the yuan, it's got a couple of names. It's like the dollar or the buck or the greenback, has moved up to fourth rank. It just moved the Japanese yen, out for global payments. And that's caused some headlines across the economic world, where they're saying, oh, the renminbi is coming up and it's going to be used for the global currency and so on. It's 4.6% of the global payments market, according to the SWIFT system. The SWIFT system, yes, you want to say something?
You go ahead, Bob. When you get, okay. It's about this subject.
Okay. It's 4.6%, and they came up from 3.6%. the month before, and it surpassed the yen for the first time since January of 2022, which isn't very long ago. Okay, so why is this important? Because that number gets thrown around and people say they're going to be the global reserve currency and so on. They're at 4.6% of the global trade right now in currency. So why am I not worried about that? Well, because they're behind the pound sterling, which is about 7% of the global trade currency, which is behind the euro, which is about 25% of the global reserve currency, which is behind the dollar, which is right at 50% of the global reserve currency. And that number is moving up, not down. Why is it that the renminbi is being used more? Is because the Chinese banks have lowered interest rates. They have lowered interest rates because they're in a deflationary environment. They're not fighting inflation. They're going the other direction, which is much, much worse for their economy. So they've had to lower their interest rates. Their interest rates now are at 1.95%. That's down about a quarter percent from September. Why is that a big deal? And people are like, why would we? Well, nobody wants to put money there and only get 1.95 when you can put it in an American money market and get 5.3 or 5.5. Why is that a big deal? Because global reserve currencies aren't where you deposit it. It's where you get your loans to make the deal. And if you can make a loan in a Chinese bank at 1.95% to do a purchase somewhere else, this is why it popped up. The Chinese don't want their currency to be used for this stuff, though. So they have all kinds of restrictions on moving money out of China. And there's a bunch of reports right now about people trying to move money out of China that are in China because they see bad deflation coming forward. Their productivity is dropping. Their manufacturing is going down. They're not competing well on innovation. They just put a big ban on export of rare earth processing technologies. They just also banned put a tariff on exporting rare earths in general, but they're also restricting their own technology going out to other people on how to separate the rare earths. That's not a big deal because the United States technology is in advance of theirs. It just takes a while to get caught up. So this is kind of covering four different subjects there. Rare earths just got banned and exports from China. Well, what are rare earths? Well, they go into magnets and they go into electronics. It's about 14 different elements that are used quite a lot in electronics. Batteries and solar technology are heavily based in rare earth minerals. And the number one producer of rare earth minerals right now is China. However, rare earth production in the United States has more than doubled in the last 3 years. Rare earth production in Australia has about tripled in the last 3 years. And we're sitting on newfound mines of rare earth in Sweden, across Africa, in the United States, more rare earth than have been mined in the totality of human history combined in just one of those positions, and there's multiple of those one positions. Sweden has found, Texas has found, California has found. Rare earths are everywhere. They're not that rare. That's not the reason why they're called rare earths. But it takes a while to get that production going. So to cover that, the Chinese ban is not likely to influence prices for a very long period of time, but short period it is. So there's a lot of weird stuff going on in the world that, you know, interest rates there and here. What do you have to add here?
We're concerned about China effectively embargoing technology for and cutting off supplies of rare earth. That's what OPEC did with oil. And the end result was we innovated in the United States and found out a way to produce oil much cheaper than they could produce oil. And as a result, we became the world's largest oil producer. And we have plenty of rare earths in the United States, for example. It's just a matter of being willing to spend the time and innovation and money. And I think people will find inexpensive ways to get it out of the ground now that we need to do it.
Yeah, and in ways that are clean for our environment. Because traditionally, mining of rare earths is basically strip mining, and it's horrible for the groundwater and everything else. And so we've been happy to put that pollution over into China and say, let you guys do the pollution and we'll just get the other stuff. Well, we can do it now without the pollution. Our technology has moved on. And the technology innovation in rare earths was funded by U.S. government money through DARPA. DARPA is defense money that's all about research and new innovation in areas. They've come out with technologies for the separation of rare earths that are far in advance of what China is using now. So them saying, we're going to ban an export of our processing technology for rare earth, you're kind of late on that. We've already got better technology to do it. It's far better than what is being used in China. Go ahead.
It's kind of like Monty Python, the quest for the Holy Grail, where they're coming up and say, we're in search of the Holy Grail.
We already got one.
Says, we already have one. It's very nice.
Right. Well, yeah. So you don't sell us your technology on how to do it. It's okay. We don't mind so much that you're not selling it to us because we have it already. We have better than that. So that's kind of covering a big macro picture of where are we hurting still. Sweden has our largest deposit of vital minerals used in electric vehicles and other green technology ever discovered in Sweden, followed by largest found resources in rare earth technology ever discovered in Texas, followed by California and so on. So these discoveries weren't even looking because it doesn't cost a whole lot to bring them out of the ground except environmentally. And we didn't want to do that. So traditionally, it's a 10 to 15 year process to get one of these mines up and running because of all of the ecological issues. We've got better ways of doing it now. It won't take us that long. And we got to play some commercials. I hit a lot of interesting points here. This is our last live episode. We have a best of episode for the 30th that's coming up. Older Baldy's going to be off in Italy somewhere, and younger Baldy's going to be over in Arizona. So our newsletter may be a little bit weird when it comes out next Friday as well because of time zone issues and so on. But bear with us. I think the market closes at 10 p.m. in Italy, and that's generally when we get the letter really going. So just know that that's coming. If you want to give us questions for the podcast, please send them in throughout the week rather than right on the Saturday. Though if you do it on the Saturday, you just expect it a week later. We're looking forward to the change, but also have some odd feelings about it. So if you'd like to join the conversation this time around, emails in here are jeff@tpwc.com. and jake@tpwc.com. This is a good time to send it in, and we've got about 10 minutes left after the commercials, and we'll be back on the other side of these vitally important announcements from our sponsors. And we're back with more of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jake and
Jeff
McClure. This is our last live broadcast after 27 years. And I wanted to take a moment and thank you all those folks that have been listening to us for so long. We're not done. We're going to podcast. It hopefully will be more convenient. And that the whole concept of the era that we've lived through in the last 27 years for AM radio. We started our broadcast in 1997, and I joined it with you in 1998. And the idea that when we started, we were in a big building in Temple with a whole floor dedicated to 1400 AM. There was a big production room with three microphones and large desks for each microphone, a window on two sides of the room, so two windows into the room from other production rooms that had microphones in them, and we had producers on both sides of us taking calls in. We had 15 phone lines available for call-in, and they would speak in through our headphones saying, so-and-so's on the line, and they have a question about something or another, and we would take that call, and we had the ticker tape news coming in. You could hear it going, and all of the ads were being done on 8-tracks that you would put in and flip over. There was still a turntable for music, should we choose to use the turntable, come forward through multiple owners of the studio where that studio was sold, and they moved in with five other radio stations to one building, and KTM was relegated to one room, no producer, and they had three lines to call in. And over the years since then, none of that equipment has changed. We're not using 8-tracks to play anymore. There is an old computer that sits in there that does play the ads, but most of the machines are semi-broken in there. There's one line to be used to call in, and that line is used by us because we're not in the studio anymore. The world has changed. AM was one of the preeminent ways to get news 25 years ago, and they apologized to us every time they talked to us that they couldn't afford to pay us a salary to come in and do the radio program, and they said our ratings were amazing and that they loved us, and please don't leave because we can't pay you. And over the last 2.5 decades, that's changed from we can't pay you a salary, we're so sorry, to thank you for doing this free, that's really we really appreciate that, to we're going to start charging you to do this. And this is where we say, no, we had ratings that had around 50,000 listeners 25 years ago, and we're down to around 3,500 listeners on AM radio. And we appreciate you for sticking with us. Please don't hear us saying this is bad in some way. But moving to the podcast means that those of you that have listened to us diligently for all of these decades can still do it. But quite often, new automobiles don't even have an AM radio. And most people don't have an AM radio in their house. And we did a question out there to folks and how they listen to us. And some of you still do listen on an antenna AM radio. But the vast majority of you are listening to us in some digital means or another. And we're just moving fully over there. The fact is that AM radio is likely to continue on the path that it's on, in that most people will reach to a smartphone or a computer to listen rather than having an antenna somewhere that they're adjusting to get better reception. And we're just taking that next step. It's a weird feeling. I answered that a lot about how I felt of the empty space. How do you feel about this?
Well, I think we've been at it one more year than you thought, but that's all right.
96 instead of 97?
Yeah, because I found a tape from 1996.
Okay.
So I know. All right. We don't have good records on that. I'm definitely going to miss it. It's something that I've loved doing.
Ditto.
I worked in radio in high school and college and off and on thereafter. And I've really enjoyed doing this. But times move on and things change, and so do we. Very frankly, not having a Saturday morning, giving up every Saturday morning to do the radio show where I don't get to see my family, has produced a situation where I literally don't have a single day of the week where I don't have to get up and go do something.
Yeah.
And that gets old.
Yeah.
That gets really old. We get and go to church on Sunday morning. I get up and go to the radio show on Saturday. We work the rest of the time, and the universe has changed. It's moved on. A lot of things that I used to do don't work anymore, and I wouldn't expect them to work.
But how do you feel about it? What is your feeling?
Nostalgia.
I think that's a good way. Yeah.
I will remember it as better than it was.
That's the way it's supposed to be, I think. I think that's a good way of leaving it, to remember it better than it was.
We're almost out of time. And also, I will miss having people, when I begin to speak somewhere, to somebody saying, wait a minute, that voice is very familiar. Are you Jeff McClure?
And we've had that in airports and in restaurants and everywhere we go. I don't think that's going to go away, though. I think the podcast is going to continue that. The digital side of what we do, you know, last week I was at a hardware store and the guy said, hey, are you one of the personal wealth coach? And I said, yep. And he said, I listen to you. You're amazing. I go, whoa, you must not have listened very long then. That's the way we kind of approach this little self-deprecation. But we really appreciate you all. I can't say that enough. This past 27 years has been a major part of my life. And I appreciate all of you who listened and who participated. And even if you just participated by listening, we appreciate you. And I hope that we have provided a service to the entire community by educating and informing or otherwise amusing and entertaining over the past 27 years. Thank you very much, all of you. And we're about out of time for all of our episodes forever. On AM. If you would like to talk to us off the air, that's how we make our money when we don't get paid for doing the radio, is we give advice to people of relatively high net worth on how to treat their own personal economy. We do portfolio management for them and advice on how to manage on businesses and trusts and foundations and corporations and all the rest of it. We continue to do that. And if you would like to talk to us off the air on that subject, you can reach us locally at
254-947-1111.
You can reach us toll free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. Or you can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com, where you can listen to our radio programs going back lots of years. You can listen to podcasts wherever they're found, Spotify, Podbeam, Apple, all of them, we're there. And you can contact us directly on the contact form on our website or email us directly at jeff@tpwc.com and jake@tpwc.com. Thank you very much for listening for 27 years to The Personal Wealth Coach. We appreciate you.